Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ahoy, podcast voyagers. It's the Nerdist Podcast number 362. I'll be performing in Salt Lake City, Utah, at a place called Wise Guys. That is coming up in June. The dates would be June 6th, 7th, and 8th. That's in West Valley City, Utah. So go to nerdist.com/calendar for all the comedy dates that are coming up. Also performing at Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con. We're doing a live Nerdist podcast at the Balboa Theater. Information is at that same link, nerdist.com/calendar. I'd like to thank for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist podcast, Carbonite Online Backup. You probably sometimes, I'll occasionally back files up, because why would I need to keep my personal files? Machines never break down. You would be the wizard of foolishness. So Carbonite Online Backup keeps all of your files forever. It's automatically and continually backed up in the background. You never even have to think about it. And then when disaster strikes, you just pull all your files back down on your new machine, or if you have to reboot your system, or if you have to reinstall your system software, or whatever it is that you do, you just use Carbonite to save your ass, and it'll work every time. Plans start at $59 a year. Start your free trial today at Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Nerdist. Get 2 bonus months with purchase. That's Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Nerdist. And now this episode is Jim Jefferies, who has a show on FX called Legit. He's a stand-up comic, and Jim's cool. When he came in, I think he was a little suspect of, like, what's this Nerdist thing all about? And then you'll find that about three-quarters of the way through the podcast, we uncover that Jim is possibly the biggest nerd in the room. I don't want to spoil it. So you should just listen. Spoilers. Spoilers, sweetheart. The Nerdist Podcast, number 362, with Jim Jefferies.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
You may ignore that makeup puff. All right. I don't know why that's
set up for podcasting.
Yeah, we really got it going. We paid for all of this out of pocket.
Mm-hmm. We're not squatting this at all.
Someday they'll find out that we've been using this place. But until that day,
Nick hasn't ratted us out yet, and he's got headphones on, so sure he's not even listening.
I'm sorry, I don't normally listen to the show. So is there anything particular I should have prepared or anything?
Yeah,
just a tight 75 minutes of brand new material.
Yeah, that's what I got. It's all Oscar based.
Great.
not all of it's gonna work.
No, okay. So just for really, it's basically just us shooting the shit for an hour. But so about the Oscars, a bunch of people said, as they do every year, this was the worst Oscars ever. Like, everyone always says that. But then I talked to a couple other people that were like, it wasn't that bad.
I thought it was great. I was drunk.
It wasn't terrible. Oh, good.
Yeah. So I thought, and I had some friends over, and we had a pool, and that was fun.
Yeah.
We all gambled.
I had a bit of scotch in me, and I was tweeting things that I shouldn't have tweeted.
Sure.
Like, Michael Douglas would do a really good job playing his father post-stroke now.
Yeah, that's probably not.
Yeah,
That's the bit that I didn't get was the Chicago.
That's the watermark film of the century. You didn't get that memo right before the Oscars happened?
Yeah, it was just like they went, Like, it's the equivalent of doing, like, now our dedication to Forrest Gump. You know what I mean?
No, the Forrest Gump's too old to even be in that now.
Right.
Like, it's not even, it's like a dedication to, like...
A film that did well many years ago.
Yeah. But not even that many years ago. 10 years ago.
And not even a film that changed film. Just a movie, a musical that worked out well.
Yeah, that worked out well. It was like there was something else that was meant to be on there.
Right.
Yeah. And then they just dragged Catherine Zeta-Jones and they went, we've got the same dancers. And Zellweger was just wasted at the bar and she was like, I'll do it. And they went, no, we just need Catherine.
We're going to send you up with Kristen Stewart. Was it to Kristen Stewart and Renee Zellweger that went up together?
Kristen Stewart and Radcliffe.
Oh, Daniel Radcliffe,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Kristen Stewart, who just doesn't give a shit about anything, apparently.
Well, she had hurt her foot, so maybe she was on pain meds.
Maybe.
Yeah, sure. Maybe. Does that explain the bruise on her arm?
Fighting werewolves, what do you want?
I was, I'm going to name drop ever so slightly, I had DJ Qualls at my house.
Oh, nice.
What?
For the Oscars, right? And DJ went, she's so wasted, man. She's wasted. I know her. She's always wasted. So there's your inside scoop for that one.
There you go.
This is the Hollywood second. This is literally 1 second scoop. I've been a fan of yours for a long time, comedy-wise. I think the first time I saw you live was in Montreal, probably, I don't know, I feel like it was maybe five years ago now.
Yeah, I've done it a few times.
5 or 6 years
probably
ago?
The first time was like 6 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. And it was in, I think it was in the Club Soda room.
It was the Nasty Show, yeah.
The Nasty Show, that's what it was, yeah.
The Nasty Show a couple of times, and then they started doing those solo shows.
Do you like those better? Did you?
That solo show in Montreal was the reason, I was like, they put on four for the first time, and now they do a whole lot of solo shows, but that was the reason why I got my agents over here and moved to America, so I got to thank Montreal for that. I had a person from CAA come up to me in the street and go, we'd like to sign you. And they go, we're from CAA. And I was there with my British agent. There was some younger comics staying around. And I went, what's CAA? Like that, right? And they all laughed like, oh, you're good, yeah. and then they put their card in the top of my pocket. And I turned to my British manager and I said, what is CAA? And he goes, I've got no idea, right? And this is just when people started Googling on their phone. You know,
oh, right.
And he went, he had like an iPhone that could do it. And he went, they're in an agency. He goes, well, we haven't got an American agent yet. We'll see how they work out. You know what I mean?
That's the biggest agency and the most powerful agency. Yeah. Unless, of course, they were like, oh, no, we're the Canadian artist agency.
Yeah, I went, all right, what can it hurt? I'll come over and do a couple of weeks worth of gigs.
That's amazing.
And I came over and they put me in the Laugh Factory. And I started just doing my regular set, which involves cunt a lot. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And just the audience just stared at me. My first gig in America.
Now, yeah. I'm surprised because a lot of times the accent is the workaround for that.
But after that, they sent me on the road and they billed me as that guy.
Oh, okay.
But if you just rock up to a club and no one's heard of you, and there's also this, there's not that many popular Australian stand-up comedians around the world, like especially in America.
Sure.
It's me and
Tim Minchin. Yeah. And you're both from Perth, right?
I went to university in Perth. Oh, okay. I think he's from Perth. I know for a fact that...
Perth proper.
That many years ago, about 6 or 7 years ago, my mother and his mother were in hospital and they shared a room just by coincidence.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, and they had a little bit of a mum-off. You know what I mean? Where they started bragging about their kids. And then it got down to their youngest boys. And it's, well, my son's a comedian who lives
really?
In the UK. Well, my son's a comedian who lives in the UK. Well, my son's done this, my son's done that. And then it ended with Mitchin's mum going, well, my son plays piano at a classical pianist level and writes original music. Right, and my mum was like, "My son says cunt a lot."
Game, set, match.
That's you guys. I'm always kind of envious of you. Perform all over the world. You perform in like South Africa,
in Tokyo. I've performed.
Have you really?
Yeah.
How's that like?
Well, I did it.
Besides performing for robots,
in the corner of a pizza restaurant.
Uh-huh.
To white businessmen.
Okay.
You know, and I got paid good money for it, but it was literally, they don't even have TV that's in English. They have nothing.
Right.
So if you go out there and work for a company or something and you don't really speak Japanese, then they fly guys in to do shit, you know?
Wow.
And it's the only big major city where I couldn't get back to my hotel. Like, they don't speak English fucking at all. Right, everywhere else you just like
you take it for granted.
Yeah, you could they could speak pidgin, sort of where you could go the big tall with the pointy
whole separate language family. Yeah. Completely separate
language
family.
You could get back to a Marriott, you know what I mean? Yeah. But I couldn't get the taxi drivers. I just had to sleep on the street when I was in Tokyo.
Well, someone explained to me, and I didn't do the research to check if this was true or not, but they said the other major hurdle with trying to communicate to taxi drivers in Tokyo is that the way that the new addresses get added is that it's not like this block is, you know, 100 to 300. It's whenever there's a new building that gets the next sequential address.
Yeah.
And so there's no real rhyme or reason other than chronologically of when the buildings were built.
Oh, so like you could have like 5700 and then next to it could be
two.
One.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's no, like, if you're looking at a map and you don't speak the language, it's, you know, but maybe that's not true,
The only English speaking I had in my Tokyo visit was I was walking down the street looking like a fucking giant, right? I'm 6 foot, right? But it's just my head poking over. Thousands of people was all bunched up and they're all walking. And this guy walks up to me and he looks me in the eye and he goes, "I am walking home from work." And I said, "Yes, you are." And he went, "Did you understand?"
Oh, that's
and
awesome. Went, he was testing
went,
you.
"Yes, I did." And then he went, "Yes." Right? So he just came from his English speaking class. He has to do some deal or whatever. And then he thought, "Oh, fuck it, I'm going to give this a go." But thank God I wasn't German or
something.
Where I knew a bit of English, but his accent was too
hard. Oh, you would have totally fucked him over.
Yeah,
for
I would have just gone. You could have walked home like, fuck.
Destroys confidence. He gives up. He doesn't go for that job he was trying to get where he needed to be.
And
bilingual.
We know how it ends in Japan. Dishonor, stabs himself.
It's all over. What do you find to be, can you do pretty much the same act in different countries?
There's more problems regionally in America than there is country to country. You know, I'm performing in Austin on Friday and Dallas on Saturday, and I at the moment I'm doing a 15 minute anti-gun routine, which has been killing at my New York and LA shows that I've just done. I'm not as optimistic.
I think Austin will be
Austin will be all right. Yeah. Austin is sort of the Austin is like anti-Texas. It's like this liberal bubble.
It's also that people will start writing on like Ticketmaster or something. They're like I tuned out as soon as he did his anti-gun thing.
Right.
Keep his opinions to himself. Because it's also that foreign thing that they really hate when you talk about any of their amendments.
Which is why they tried to get Piers Morgan deported.
Exactly. Exactly. They all forget about the First Amendment just so fucking quick.
Yeah. No, if you're from here, yeah.
Yeah, you can't change an amendment. And you're like, yes, you can. The word means to change.
No, I don't think it does.
We're
that thing where people go, keep your opinions to yourself, and it's like, if you've come to my show, you'd like me for my opinions.
Go Cowboys.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You have to take the good opinions with the bad, right? If you come to my show, I'm an atheist comedian. There's a lot of religious people who don't agree with me, but I know religious people come to my shows because they can tune out for that little while or suspend belief.
Right. Well, a lot of
gun owners don't have that tune out bit.
A lot of mainstreamy audiences are with you until you say something that they don't agree with, and it's like, keep your opinions to yourself. Yeah, but you didn't have a problem with all those other opinions because you agreed with them. Yeah. Can't you just kind of
keep your opinions that I don't agree with to yourself? That's the big one. Yeah.
Well, but that's I think it's sort of the mark of a great comedian, you know, where you can take something like that you know might polarize the audience, but still maybe manage to turn some of them around. Like, you know, you and Bill Burr, guys that can actually kind of take the audience and go, I know you're probably uncomfortable with this, but I'm going to make you like it by the end.
Yeah. I say that. I do say during the whole routine, I just go, I know you don't agree with me. I get it. I just want to give some arguments. You know what I mean? Like, if you keep saying that, you're fine. Why is this podcast called The Nerdist?
We are nerds. Look, he's got a Mario t-shirt on.
Well, he's not a nerd. The thing is, nerds, it's a weird thing. That word has changed now, hasn't it?
Well, it has, because
it used to be people who were good in school.
Well, it wasn't just people who were good in school. It was, so, you know, when I was growing up, there was a, we didn't really have a name for it. Mm. And it wasn't until the movie Revenge of the Nerds came out where we were like, oh, I guess that, you know, like we identified.
Well, I was an outcast at school. I was not popular. My mother was a school teacher at the school and 300 pounds and yelled a lot. You know, it was an uncomfortable school. But I didn't do good in school. So I was never considered a nerd in the Australian sense of a thing. But, you know, I don't classify a nerd as someone who likes Star Wars because everyone fucking likes
Star Everyone Wars. Likes Star Wars.
Star Wars is it's no not, longer the example.
You know, I always say it's not what you like, but how you like those things. Like how, you know.
But don't you find that in the comedy community, I'm not saying you guys, but there is a certain, because of the power of the internet now, that there is a breed of nerd that's become the bully.
Oh, there's no question. There's no question, especially like when you look at comment threads or Twitter or, you know, where the nerd, because the nerds don't have the physical prowess. And so they attack you with bitterness and knowledge if they go to the dark side.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I've always said it's sort of like if you have a fan base that's a little more. A non-nerd fan base might just write you an email and go like, you're a fucking piece of shit.
Yeah.
But if you have a nerd fan base and you get an email, it's like five paragraphs long and there's like, it's footnoted and they tell you in detail.
And things they'll get a YouTube clip and they'll put it up and they'll put a lot of effort.
Yeah.
But I think, you know,
into their anger.
In the early days for me, it was, you know, I was in the computer lab and math group and chess club and, you know, I was into computers and video games and
video games, sure, right? I would be, I don't know, maybe I'm not self-knowing, but in the comedy community, I would be seen as one of the cooler kids probably in
right.
that group,
right?
Right. And I have a degree in opera.
Do you really? Yes.
You fucking nerd.
Yes.
You have a
and I know a lot about musical theater, but Seth MacFarlane's sort of making that cool now, but I don't.
Well, that's debatable.
Pretty nerdy, right?
That is pretty incredible, actually. Yeah. That a degree in opera is pretty incredible.
Well, I lie. I was 3 months off a degree in opera. I quit to become a stand-up comedian, but I did a musical theater and opera. I did the same course that Hugh Jackman did at university.
Oh, wow.
And Hugh Jackman was the guy. The course only ever took 20 people each year. And that was just before Hugh Jackman got famous, and he was already the one that all the teachers talked about. Like, when Hugh was here, and I was like, who the fuck is this Hugh guy? He's in a couple of musicals in Australia, and then all of a sudden he's fucking Wolverine, and we're like, all right, shut up.
But he's not singing.
Yeah, yeah.
When Wolverine was here.
It was before they filled his body with adamantium. But, yeah, you know, I guess the name of the, you know, my website was Nerdist, and it was really about all the things that I liked, which I think you would have been able to put in traditionally, you know, nerdy buckets. But I don't really think it's about, you know, if you're into opera, it's...
I'm not into opera. It was just that I was failing the musical theater course, so I took another unit because I was a better singer than I was dancer. So the way...
Oh, wow.
The way for me to get through the course was to move some of my majors over to my strength.
Very clever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I my tap dancing and whatnot was subpar. It was one of those university courses where occasionally you just look around going, is this seriously what we're doing today?
We're paying money for this.
Yeah, and it was all scholarship as well. Everyone, it was all audition based. The 3,000 people auditioned, 20 people got through. So the government wow. paid for it because Australia has that little thing that we're not really, Australia really likes to think of themselves as being cultural when really we're cultureless. And so anytime that there's someone, opera, all right, there's some money. Go and do that.
Comedy's really good in Australia right now, though, isn't it? Like comedy in Australia and London, there's kind of a comedy boom, I've heard.
Stand-up comedy in Australia does very well with touring acts. So at the moment I'm going back there, I'm doing a whole lot of theatres. I'm selling out faster than I'm selling out over here. And I've had no TV exposure in Australia. And it's my first. But the thing is, the clubs are suffering.
Okay.
There's one comedy club in Sydney. So people are seeing the big names when they come out and filling theatres, but the ground roots in Australia isn't going very well. If for me, it feels like there's more people who want to become stand-up comedians than want to watch it.
Okay.
On the club basis.
Sure.
And then when they have the festivals, their festivals kill. Like, and every town has Perth has a festival, Sydney has a festival, Melbourne has the big festival.
Sure.
And when they have those festivals, the comedy goes mental for 2 weeks and then it's over.
Right.
And so that's where you see the boom sort of happening. But London is actually going through, well, the UK is going through a slump. It went through a big, when I first started out over there, there was more comedy clubs than there were comedians. People were getting promoted through the ranks.
Oh, wow.
Really quick because they just couldn't fill all the comedy clubs. And some of the change expanded so much. And then that, obviously, you expand that much, obviously, there has to be a fall.
Oh, gotcha. Because I feel like it was even just a few years ago that I was talking to Jimmy Carr at one of the Montreal festivals, and he was saying, oh, there's this, you know.
It's not hurting for Jimmy Carr.
No, not for him. But he was saying that, you know.
Well, I mean, his taxes are.
Yeah. I'm friends with Jimmy, and I had a bit of a word to him. I didn't do anything. It was legal. and you're like, as long as it was legal. It's like John Bishop said something on TV after he got caught because the Prime Minister of Britain called him a scumbag or something.
Oh, Jesus.
Jimmy, the Prime Minister called Jimmy out as an example.
What specifically was he accused of?
Jimmy has over £3 million worth of TV deals a year, and he was paying less than 1% tax.
Oh.
And what happened was Jimmy had found out that if you open a company and they loan you some money from your own money to, there was some way that his accountant went, I know this system that you only have to pay 1%. So Jimmy was doing it, right? And he's saying that Jimmy's one of the nicest guys in the world. There's more charitable gigs than any other comic I've met. So I don't want to fucking slay him. But he got, and all the prime minister's mates were doing it.
Right.
All the 1%ers were
doing
it.
Of course.
And then, but Jimmy was used as an example of how bad that could get. And I think John Bishop, this comedian, was on telly when it happened. He goes, Jimmy Carr doing that. Every comedian thought the same as they think about his job, about his jokes. I wish I thought of that first.
So did he end up having to pay like some exorbitant amount?
No, he's now paying regular tax.
Right.
Just sort of went, sorry.
Yeah.
But he does a lot of shows that are like news-based where it's like he's talking about the news and others, like how the banks ripped everyone off. And then when he goes on, he's like,
well, nothing in the news today. I don't know. What's happening?
He rolled with it pretty good. I was at a gig with him in Edinburgh, and he was on stage with some spotty students, got up and called him a dirtbag and yelled at him a bit. And he just sort of.
Isn't that interesting where you can get to a certain point in your comedy career where it's not just about the jokes anymore, that they're sort of a weird, almost political place that you have in society where people come in with a, you know, with baggage like that?
There's got to be throughout history, there's certain comics that are left untouched when they do things. And then there's certain comics that I don't understand why. I think, and I blame Bill Hicks for this, and as soon as you say Bill Hicks, I know people are angry right now for me saying this.
No, I think it's fun.
Why do we have to have such integrity when it comes to advertising? It's like Bill Hicks, if you were in an advert, you should kill yourself, blah, 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 blah. Actors can fucking have a watch on and be like credible Oscar-winning actors.
Yeah.
Leonardo DiCaprio, you'll be at the airport, there'll be a Tag Heuer, and he's got all the fucking money in the world.
Well,
and you got another million on the pile?
Just
right?
So let me tell you, first of all, I don't have a problem with it.
No, I don't either.
But I will say, I think the problem that people might have with it is they look at comics to sort of be the unbiased editorial voice of, you know. And so if you're, I think a lot of people are like, oh, well, if that guy's getting paid. I remember because, I think maybe it was Rantony Minor. It was Bill Hicks where he went after Leno for like, fuck you and your Doritos money or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I think people assume, just like if you're a news program that takes money, I don't know. I think maybe that's what it is.
I've been offered a couple of beer endorsements over the years, sponsorship deals and stuff like that, and I've turned them down out of fear.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for the nerd community.
But
coming
I'll tell
up.
You what, I'll tell you, you'd be fine,
we're
especially
okay
because
it.
I think if you, as long as you're open with people and go, look, you know, I'm a working performer and this helps me do what I do and there's nothing wrong with this. And I think as long as you're open about it, I think people would be like, well, of course you should get
then
paid.
Then you say, plus, this beer is delicious. Try some.
It is. I won't tell you the brand, but I'm still being courted by them. But
I think you do it.
I think it's the weird thing now is because I got the TV show.
Legit,
which I'd like to advertise. What's legit on Thursdays at 10:30?
On FX.
You sell out. Now he's advertising.
It's got a TV show. What the fuck, man?
Yeah.
It used to just be about the jokes and not getting paid ever.
I got one guy write to me that said, because I quit the my podcast I did with Eddie.
Yeah, talking shit.
It was a time thing. I was doing 50-hour weeks on the show, and then the thing, and I couldn't get there, and I had to wake up at 6, and I said, all right, well, you guys just do it, and you have my portion of whatever's coming in, and I'll come and drop in every now and again, you know?
Yeah.
And amongst me and Eddie and all the other guys, it was all amicable and everything was fine, but then people were like, fuck you! Like this, right? And I'm like, I'm making a TV show for you. I'm giving you content. It's not like I'm just sitting back. And so I had a child at the same time, and it was like, oh, well, obviously now he's got a kid. And then someone wrote to me, and I'd finished filming the show. Someone wrote to me a big letter how I haven't been funny since my child has been born.
That was just like a few months ago, right?
And I'm like, but I haven't produced, I haven't sent anything out in the world since my child's been born.
Well, you got you on a technicality. He's right.
Unless that was my girlfriend. My girlfriend may have written that. If she wrote that, then that's fair enough.
But the good news is that I think those voices are like 0.0001%, and so it's. I mean, personally,
The show. I thought the show would get a lot more flack. The show, critically and from the audience, has been very well received.
Well, I think if you were to do this beer commercial and you were able to be you, then I don't think it's a problem. I don't think it's a problem at all, as long as it feels like, you know, Henry. We talked about this with Henry Rollins, where he would do, you know, like ads for stuff, and people would be like, "You're fucking selling." He's like, "No, that's a business transaction. Selling out is when you compromise your belief system for a paycheck."
Yeah.
But you enjoy beer. Why shouldn't you get to work with a beer company? It's not like you, you know, going, "I'm Jim Jeffries for Allstate Insurance." You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Fairness to Allstate, they do have a great program.
It's really good. Forgiveness policy.
I don't have as good a voice as the president from 24.
No one does. No one does.
I like the fact that guy's probably got a name, but he'll always be
Dennis
Rodman.
So close to Dennis Rodman. But I always think of him as the guy from Major League.
Oh, yeah, he's fucking
Joe Boo.
He's not from Major League.
He was from Major League.
He's Serrano.
He's Serrano.
He's not Serrano.
He is Serrano.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. The president is also Serrano.
Yeah. Serrano, yeah.
Yeah. I always thought of him as the guy who was playing baseball in Asia with Mr. Baseball, Tom Selleck.
he is Serrano from Major League.
He is in the Tom Selleck movie as well, Mr. Baseball.
He might be. I haven't seen Mr. Baseball in so long.
I haven't seen Major League Baseball ever.
He's the other baseball player in Major Baseball who's in Tokyo, who's thinking if he plays well, he might get back into the majors.
I'll tell you what, even as much as I didn't understand baseball, I always loved Major League. I always loved that movie.
Oh, it's such a good movie.
Holds up.
It's such a good movie.
I think it holds up. I haven't seen it in 10 years.
Yeah, it holds up.
I have a homework assignment.
Even Major League 2 holds up in a strange way.
The recasting of Wesley Snipes in that movie is amazing, because Wesley Snipes is in the first one, and then
he gets really famous.
It's also about, like,
but they don't change the character.
The second film, they all come back, and they decide that they're better at things that they weren't good at before.
Yeah. Oh, right.
So he's going to be a home run hitter. He's not a speed man anymore. He's not going to steal bases. He's just going to hit it over the wall. And it turns out that he's only about 2 feet off being able to do it every time. So if he just goes into the waste room a little bit, it's not like he's failing by a lot. He's like 2 feet short from being the best home run hitter ever.
Plus, that's the beginning of the steroids era. They really could have written that in and had a good time with it.
Well, Charlie Sheen was taking steroids in that one. He admitted to it.
I'm sure he was.
He admitted to it. He took steroids during Major League 2 so he could throw the fast. He was throwing in the 80s, which is for a regular human, it's bloody fast.
Very fast.
He's there are some people.
What won't Charlie put in his body? That's my question.
Anything.
I was doing a photo shoot for FX on Saturday. And
I just left DJ Qualls.
I just left DJ Qualls' house. And they're doing, because we got, like, when they're trying to advertise the network for next year, they're doing a thing where we all arrive at the upfronts on different vehicles. I won't give away what the
thing is.
But so Charlie Sheen was being shot after me. Russell Brand just got shot before me. And then I was like, why are we shooting this all together? Why wouldn't you shoot us all together? And then it dawned on me on the way home, we're not all getting renewed.
Oh, no.
There's some of us who'll just be cutting out of that little montage.
I hope it's like car racist, and you show up in a Vauxhall and Russell Brand shows up in a Mini Cooper.
I saw Russell, and I've known Russell for a while, and Russell has that thing where he uses so many superlatives, but doesn't actually say anything. And then uses words like quandary where it's not meant to be. You know, it's the quandary of the extremist of the motion of the mind, Jim. And oh, you'll go,
that sounds like that sounds
then,
like a thing.
And then he says it so fast, you go, you're right. Yeah, that's... And then he'll do things like he'll say to me, he'll go, Jim, I've always been a fan of your comedy. It's amazing. It's outrageous. The things that you pull and the words that you say and the things that you have developed. And then I'll go, did you watch the last two specials? And he goes, no, I haven't seen them. Like, we straight in, like all be sucking up. And then honesty right at the end.
No. I imagine they're very good, though. I hear
but
good things.
But I had an assistant describe it to me.
Yeah. All right, I lied. I didn't have anyone describe it to
me. The thing is, I rock up with my friend who's staying at my house at the moment, who's a stand-up comic from London. And then Russell literally drives up on a golf cart with women just hanging off the side, like holding onto the vehicle like a rickshaw in India.
Oh my God! And he's a hit with the ladies. Love the crazy long hair and the beard and the
which is the weird thing is there's a lot of women in Britain that look like Russell Brand. There's a lot of women that have
Women could get a lot of pussy.
Yeah, very close to that thing. If they blew you, could smash some teeth out. They're bad dental plans.
How do you like doing comedy in America?
I like it. Yeah, I like America's home now, man. I got an American kid.
So, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is his citizenship? Is it Australian and...
My girlfriend's Canadian.
Oh.
The kid's American.
Gross.
Yeah. It's an Australian-Canadian-American baby.
Oh, my God. He could go so many places.
And we didn't fuck up either, man. His name's Hank.
Yeah.
He's an American as fuck, man.
Hank Jeffries.
Yeah, Hank Jeffries. And his middle name's Lennon. We're after the Beatle and also the communist leader.
That's right, that's it, yes.
But Hank is, and my mother was like, oh, I can't call him Hank. It's too American. I'm like, you'll call him fucking Hank.
Because that's his name.
It's short for Henry, right? Nah. Yeah. Just fucking Hank. Named him after the king of the hill.
Do you, would you... What's the difference between raising a, like, would you want to have to raise the kid in London, or do you?
No, my house here is bigger than anything that I could buy in London for the same price. It has a yard and things like that. It's more kid friendly here than it is there. But I've done weird things. Like, I've been looking into the school system now, and I just, every school here sounds horrible.
Yeah.
It sounds like. Oh, whether they got 5 metal detectors and a couple of kids got stabbed. And then the private schools here sound like they have like 10 kids in them.
Yeah, and then you have to like go through a whole rigmarole.
But you
to
know
get
what I mean?
In.
Like private schools in Britain and stuff are great, big, massive things. In Australia, they're massive things with big sporting teams. And, and it's like, oh, we have a private school in the Hollywood Hills that has 15 kids.
Very specialized attention.
Yeah, and I'm like, I don't want my fucking kid in that school.
Right.
Because if he's anything like me, he'll stick out as a moron. Like in that.
Hank Jeffries.
I don't have high hopes for him being anything but funny. Like if he's anything like me, like funny, I'll be, you know, I was happy that when I grew up, that was held in a higher esteem in my household than being good at sport.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like that actually, being funny and having personality to my father was a bigger deal than me being able to catch a ball because I really couldn't catch a ball. To this day, I'm the worst athlete. And I desperately would love to be good at sport. I threw a pitch out at the Cubs game. And you can find it on YouTube somewhere. It's horrible. And what's the most horrible thing is I'm so unfamous that there was the who's this guy muttering.
So they were mad twice.
Yeah, who's this guy? Oh, he better be good. No, he's shit.
Ah. Well, he's not even from here?
Yeah, and then it was go home. Then the go home started coming out. And I was like, ah, oh, fuck. And the thing is, we did an episode of Legit at a baseball field where I had to throw out the first pitch at a Cucamonga Quakes game. Like, we made it minor league for the character. And I tried it again, still couldn't do it. Right? But then they made me throw it. They go, throw it badly, try to get it over the camera off to your right. Facing forward, I nailed it 4 or 5 times. I hit the camera. I can fuck up tremendously.
Oh my God, you're like Rick Vaughn. You just need a pair of glasses with the skull on them.
Well, next time I'm thinking I should just face the wrong direction.
Yes!
And just fucking do it. I'm telling you, pinpoint accuracy. It was unbelievable.
You got to play the slice, like they say.
Yeah, no, that's what I do.
I played a celebrity. I have gotten a lot of jerseys with my name on them over the years. Like, I try to get involved wherever I can get a jersey with my name on it, like a retarded child.
wherever you can. I mean, like, and not just across.
I've got a Hearts football team from Scotland, which is the Edinburgh soccer team. And that's because their manager's name was also Jim Jefferies.
Oh.
And so there was a bit. Jim Jefferies was coming and I was doing the Edinburgh Festival. And I went, wait, you're not the manager. And I was like,
and sorry, and surprise.
They presented me a jersey. The Cucamonga Quakes gave me a jersey when I went out and pitched. The Cubs gave me a jersey, and I got a jersey from my football team, Fulham. I played in a celebrity match for them, which at the time I thought I did rather well. And then I watched it back, and it's awkward to find out that you have a bad run.
It's like hearing your voice for the first time on
a
recording.
Yeah, I didn't know, because you think if you're comfortable, you think, all right, yeah, I probably look good as well, right? Yeah, I have a prance that, and it's sort of
embrace
awkward,
the prance.
No, but it's a heavy bear.
But maybe you should just think of it as a majestic unicorn.
No. Every time I ran, the commentators laughed and made comments, because when you're on the field, there's no commentary on the field.
Thank God you're a comic, though. And if you were just a guy who that was their life, and they still were like, that would be devastating. But at least you can laugh about it.
Yeah, at least I wasn't an actor who was like, yeah, okay. And I wasn't bragging before the game in the interviews when they had me like, yeah, I'm going to do this, that. I was going, I'm probably going to be shit. Like, I was saying it down camera. I'm not expecting much. And then I made like two passes and thought that was pretty good.
I mean, imagine if you're Robert Pattinson and then someone sees you running and then it's that and you're like, oh.
If I ever get an actual acting job, I'm very fearful of an actual acting job, because at the moment I'm playing myself in a sitcom that I've written.
Right.
So if I fuck a lineup, who's telling me off?
Yeah.
I don't even get close to the dialogue on the page. I know the gist, but I don't even get really close.
But to take someone else's and have to...
I sometimes pull up other actors and go, no, that's not what you're meant to be saying, because I've written it, right?
Right.
But I haven't even gotten close to my lines. And then I think to myself, if I get an actual job and I show up with this, because I've never practiced the lines... This whole idea that we have theories that actors are sitting at home learning dialogue is a load of rubbish. Yeah. You get into makeup, they give you the script, you go, what are we filming today? You sort of read it a bit, then they make you do a rehearsal, then they set up the cameras, you just ask to go last, so they're on someone else. By the time they get to you, you're sort of memorized.
Yeah.
And they're only doing chunks at a time.
You're only doing like 6 words at a time.
You can remember 6 words at a time.
Yeah, 6 lines, and you sort of get it. But you see the better actors who are very... They come into the show, and like Mindy Sterling, who we've got on the show, she played Dr. Evil's wife.
Yeah, of course.
In people at home.
Yeah, I know Mindy. Yeah. It's really funny. Yeah.
And we got John Ratzenberg on the show.
Mindy's a fucking awesome improviser.
Yeah.
By the way.
Well, her and Ratzenberg, I don't think I'm saying anything that John will be upset with me saying. We have an episode at the end. I don't want to ruin the storyline. Basically, at the end of the episode, there's a party and there's a lot of hookers there, right? And we have to give speeches. So I get up and give a speech. And it was just literally us in front of the cameras going, all right, everybody just start saying a speech. We're going to just film a montage of all the speeches and everything, right? So I was like, thank you for coming to the party, blah, blah, blah. And then the next character came up. And then Ratzenberg gets up. There's a few disabled people there, some prostitutes there. And Ratzenberg goes, there's a lot of prostitutes here, isn't there? There's nothing wrong with prostitutes. Nothing wrong at all. You know, the long history of prostitutes, starting with Mary Magdalene and ending with that pantsuit-wearing whore Hillary Clinton, who knows she's a lesbian, and why won't she... And this is no longer John's character. This is just John going for it, right? And I'm like... Whoa, right? And DJ, who plays John's son, went, Dad, right? And like in character, but then John looked at DJ out of character, like, let me finish, boy.
Oh, shit. That was some good improv, John. Who was improvising?
Yeah.
read about this in my manifesto.
I tell you what, though, if you want to, if we're going to talk about being a nerd, man, you hang out with fucking Ratzenberg for the day. That's nerd heaven.
Oh, I would imagine.
Tell me about the two episodes, the two times you were in Superman as different characters.
As different characters, he was in Superman 2.
Mm.
As one of the NASA guys.
And then he was a guy that was in charge of a fucking rocket.
Yeah.
In Superman 1. He was in charge of a cruise missile. And then he might have promoted through the ranks and started working at NASA. Right? But then, like, he's Major Durland in fucking Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
He's the one who says they have to close the blast shields because it's getting too fucking cold. The Tauntauns will freeze.
Is he really?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's
got a Star Wars figure.
I had no idea.
He's hard to recognize in some of the earlier movies because you think of him as Cliff.
Yeah.
And you think of him as kind of this like slightly older guy, but like young John Ratzenberger, he's kind of a handsome guy, and he still had
the tash. There was still a certain look. He drove Candace Bergman to see Gandhi in the movie Gandhi.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
What?
He's in The Bridge Too Far, where he was going to fight the Nazis. He's in fucking everything. He goes, yeah, I did a movie with Laurence Olivier. Right? I'm sitting there in the fucking makeup trailer, and he goes, the one bit of advice he gave me was, I went up to him and said, hey, Laurence, what advice can you give a young actor? And he goes, and he told me to never leave my wallet in the trailer. But the thing is, he's so close to actually being Cliff that sometimes you're like, is this all a bit or is he... Because he'll start telling you about inventions that he's had.
Is this the greatest...
I'm not sure if he's invented anything.
Is he out Andy Kaufman-ing Andy Kaufman?
Or... He sits next to you in the morning and you'll be getting makeup done. It'll be 6 a.m. You'll be a bit groggy. I'll be drinking a Red Bull or something like that. And he'll go, hey, you know that Jesus had a dog called Tippy. And you'll be, sorry, John. He goes, oh, yeah, walked out in the water. The poor thing drowned.
And then just back to his newspaper.
Yeah,
or whatever.
And then back to his newspaper. He doesn't really wait for a laugh. He doesn't really get laughs. He just gets an awkward.
Oh, that sounds amazing. And exactly what I want him to be like.
Yeah, he's exactly what you think he'd be like. Yeah.
It is. I guess it is sort of a. There is a certain expectation when you are attached to a character like Cliff. And then you meet in real life. Oh, no, actually, I'm just a regular guy. And you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I get it. But it's so much more the legend. It's kind of like you almost want Offerman to be like Ron Swanson. But then you're like, no, but he's not. You know, like, it's a character.
Yeah, yeah.
But hearing that, you know, maybe Cliff was an eye-opening experience for him. And it was like, this is who I'm supposed to be.
There's bits where we were like, I'm worried if he'll even say this line. And then he's like, oh, we can make it more extreme if we, you know, there was bits where I was really nervous because I thought, oh, you won't go for this. He's from traditional sitcoms. But the reason he got the part was we would, like, me and the guy I wrote it with, we'd be there, like, we'd always pull in a few people from the office and say, all right, we want to read this script and see how it plays out, like, not even without actors. And I'd always play, like, two or three of the male roles. And whenever I got to the dad's role, I just did it as Cliff Clavin. And then
you know, we could just get him.
And then by week 8, we were like, maybe we should call him. And we're like, what's his name? And we're like, the guy plays, let's call him up. He's like, and then we were like, nah, he wouldn't do it. He does all these Pixar movies. Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, great.
That's fucking awesome.
I've got to go film the new Monsters, Inc. film. That's between 4 and 6. I should be done.
Did you ever see? I want to talk. I'd love to talk to him and George Wendt is the other one that I think.
Him and George Wendt are still buddies.
Oh, that's great.
Of course they
he's
are.
He's like, hey, George is having a few problems with his heart. I think he's going into surgery. I'm going to take him over a bottle of whiskey and have a chat with him. And you're sitting there going, that's just how I want those two to be.
So what do you think about it? They sat next to each other on set all day for like, 10 years.
Yeah, for 10 years.
I guess that's true.
They're right next to each other. You know, of course they're going to.
Yeah, yeah.
They're either going to hate each other or be best friends.
I tell you what, if we go to season 3 or 4, fuck yeah, I'll get George Wendt.
You got to get George Wendt.
George Wendt will come in and be his buddy for whatever reason.
Oh, yep.
Maybe even next season.
You don't need a reason. Just do it. It's your show. You could do whatever you want.
I know, but people find that a bit corny where it's like, huh?
It's only corny. Right?
The thing that it is corny, but I want to be around it for 4 days when we film.
Right. It's only corny if the jokes are written to be like, eh, but if you just let them be themselves, then it's not going to be corny at all. Then people are like, that's fucking awesome. Like, if you don't refer to it and they're just friends and you kind of let them go, I think it'd be amazing. That would be fucking awesome.
See, the thing is, so he's married to Minnie Sterling's character in the show. Maybe they could get divorced in the second season and Cliff could become gay and then pick up George in a bear bar. Yeah, I've always known it. Oh, yeah, ever since I was a young boy, I always liked the look of men.
Here's the scene everyone always wanted.
What is it?
Or he could be a brother-in-law. There's so many things you could do with... With George. Or he could be the mailman. George Wendt is the mailman.
There's bits in the show where it's like, so if we get a second season, if I want to bring in my parents for the second season as characters that come over and stay with us for a few episodes from Australia.
Oh, that's cool.
And, you know, I think I'll just get someone to call Paul Hogan.
And just have him on.
Yeah, like
why not? Why not?
Was he not going to do it?
Another 70-year-old Australian guy. It's either him or Brian Brown. And I like Brian Brown.
What about Jacko?
Yeah, Jacko doesn't look... Yeah, well, either does Paul Hogan doesn't look like me either. Brian Brown's probably the best casting.
Brian Brown's fucking awesome.
The guy Jack Thompson, who is from a few movies.
Can we talk about FX for a second?
Yeah,
how
sure.
Fucking great FX movie. I fucking love Brian Brown.
Yeah, oh, I thought we were talking about the network. I was going to go, yes, there can be a lot of creative freedom.
Wait a minute. Yes, of course. FX the network, FX the movie with Brian Brown.
Yeah, I just did an interview for FX where there's a lot of questions where FX was like, how is it being on FX? What does it feel like? What were your initial thoughts on FX? And obviously, a lot of the answers are very good, thank you.
Yeah.
Right? And they were very good, so I'm not taking the piss. But I did a little joke, like they went, so what was your first impressions of FX? And I was like, well, I thought Brian Brown was great. All right. And they just sort of went, no, let's start that again, Jim. No. And I was going, oh.
I thought Brian Dennehy was great.
We don't want to have any jokes like that. Okay. All right. Fine.
The real star was the robot clown.
Or the crazy, like, troll creature that's in his front door that, that scares people when they go in.
Brian Brown's funny, man. He was in that movie... Along Came Polly, which wasn't a great movie, but he was funny in it.
Was that the Ben Stiller movie?
The Ben Stiller movie where he was there.
He was also in Cocktail. Coughlin's Law.
He's in a great movie that never got over here, which is a tremendous movie called Two Hands, which was Heath Ledger's last movie before he moved to America. And it's about Australian gangsters. It's sort of like a Sopranos type of thing, but everyone's in shorts.
Well, of course.
And everyone's like, I'm going to fucking kill that cunt. If he comes around here again, I'm going to shoot that cunt in the fucking head. It's a lot of that.
But they're in shorts.
And then I'm like, these mosquitoes are getting me legs.
Yeah,
I don't know what accent that was.
The movie's all about like Heath Ledger's character was meant to go collect $50,000. He went for a swim at the beach, buried it underneath a shoe. And then when he came back, it wasn't there. That's the premise of the movie. But it is a good film. It's funny.
Your accent was
basically an Australian who was raised in London and then had a horrible head trauma.
That's me.
Oh, my God. This works out so well. I wonder, so what's your thought on comedians and, you know, being sort of dark and anxious and depressed and all of that? Do you feel any of that stuff? Or are you pretty happy?
I've been on and off antidepressants my whole life. I've been diagnosed with bipolar, but I think that I'm more... personally, I think, because it's just a fucking judgment call when someone diagnoses you with these problems. There's no fucking blood test, right? It's really just a person going, I think you might be, right? I think I just suffer from depression. I think my, what they call manic episodes, I'm the type of guy that it's all of a sudden you come home to the house and I've painted everything and there's a mural. And I'm like, I just suffer from depression, all types of stuff. I don't think you need to be... suffer from depression to be a good comic. I don't hold it as a badge of you wouldn't understand.
Well, that's good, because that's sort of my question was, obviously, you know, Hank's probably going to grow up to be a pretty funny kid. Would you want him to be funny?
I would swap depression for being funny. I wouldn't. Depression's a horrible thing. It's for me, it's I don't know if you've ever had been in contact with suicide. That's the one thing I never joke about is suicide, because I find that that's something at my darkest moments I've thought about, and I've had people in my life who have committed suicide, and I feel like for all the flack I get for doing a joke about cancer or a joke about whatever, suicide fucking tears up families faster than any of those things. You know, leaves people with more guilt and more anger. And, so, right. and it's very often, you'll see even The Simpsons, like there's just like a fucking shadow of Homer hitting a light bulb, and then it's like you think he's hung himself. You would never do that with like a shadow of a, someone really thin in bed with some cigarette smoke coming.
Oh, that's true, yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So I think I'm in a good space now for me over the years. I think, I don't think money's made it better. I thought money would. I thought there was a moment where I thought, if I get a lot of money, then depression will go away.
And then you get the money and you're like, oh shit, now what do
still have the happiest time in my life was actually the first 3 years of me doing stand-up, when I was earning sort of £600 a week in London, which is more than enough to live off. I was fucking smoking weed and hanging out with my mates, and just there was so much optimism that we were all going to be something, that we had all started, that we'd all started together. And the optimism was, goals were so easy to achieve back then. They were literally, I reckon I can get into that club. And then you got into it, yay!
Yeah.
And then like a couple of weeks later, you had that other little goal and you were like, "Hey, I'm into that one as well." And it was just, I remember waking up so excited because I'd have a car journey with a comic I liked. You know, like thinking, this guy, I'm going to get to chat to this guy for 6 hours while we drive up to Scotland.
Yeah.
You know.
And now it's probably like, fuck, I got to go up to Scotland.
I got to go to fucking Scotland. I hate traveling or whatever. I still love performing. Still love it. I don't have any. I would gig every day if there was a comedy club in my living room. I'd do 2-3 shows a day. Happy as Larry. It's the traveling that fucking does my head in. I don't know about you guys, but...
not
a fan.
It is hard because I go back and forth, so I don't just go on the road for like 4 months. It's I'll just go Thursday, Friday, Saturday, come home Sunday, work, then go Thursday, Friday, Saturday, come home Sunday. So it's once I get into the pattern of it, I can roll with it pretty well.
Yeah, this tour at the moment's been pretty easy because it's just been Friday, Saturdays, you know?
Yeah.
And theaters are good because everyone already likes you.
Well, that's the thing, is that the shows have changed dramatically. For me, it was really bumming me out going and performing when no one would come out to see me on purpose and the rooms were papered. And it's like, it's a fun challenge to like, I've got to win these rednecks over.
Yeah.
But, you know, by the second show Saturday night, you're like, I'm empty. I'm just, there's nothing left in me.
Yeah. You don't get that gig anymore where it's where you go, fuck you. And you walk off. You know what I mean? And that used to happen at least 4 times a year. Where like, you people are all fucking idiots. And there'd be like one table with some girl who'd tried to convince her friends, like, stay, Jim.
No.
You know what I mean? That sad person that she's having a bad time because you're having a bad time and her friends are going to call her an idiot for fucking ever.
Well, it's hard, you know, like sometimes if you don't have most of the time if you don't have the energy, it's fine. But every once in a while, it's like you might get a crowd where you're like, come on, guys. You just have to put in 10% of the effort here. Just 10% to come together as an audience, and I'll do the rest.
Oh, I've done the thing where I've looked at myself like I've been trying so hard to win over a crowd that there's a moment in the show where you're like standing on a table and you haven't got your shirt on. And you're like,
what have I become?
You're like, I've put in too much effort here. I should have given up on you guys a long time ago. I really tried and you're not appreciating.
This is like a relationship where you're dating someone and they just keep cheating on you. You're like, okay, this time I know I can make it work.
Yeah.
Fuck, there isn't anything I can do.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to get along. But those don't, I mean, do you kind of prefer that now where it's people know who you are?
Well, I like that you can, they'll give you a little bit more breath on a new routine,
yeah.
You know, and they, a routine that might work with my crowd might even kill with my theater audience. I wouldn't do on a Wednesday down at the Improv because I know that there's not enough people who know
right.
me. And, you know, it's weird things now that I enjoy where I can do callbacks to jokes I haven't done on that show.
And they already know.
That are callbacks to previous DVDs. And you're like, that's cool.
Do you feel like it's important every once in a while to go just do a surprise set somewhere where the crowd maybe doesn't know you, just to exercise that muscle?
Yeah, I try to do that as much as possible. This current tour, I 40 minutes of it, I hadn't performed yet. I was writing while I was doing the TV show. So I just brought out a special and I thought, oh, everyone's seen that, so I got to give them a new hour. So I was going down to the clubs like crazy doing 5-minute spots and 10-minute spots. And that was very interesting because I hadn't done that for a long time.
It is sort of weird to... Well, it's nice when you have room to breathe and then in 5 minutes, then it just becomes a jokes per minute thing.
Yeah. Well, for me, because it's mostly story-based, it'll be like, I'm going to try this one story.
Sink or swim. Yeah.
And then you come up, and then it's like, here's this story. No, you don't like that?
Good night.
Yep, good night.
And then it's like at the 2-minute mark, you're like, that's the best bit of that story. You know what I mean? They're thinking at the end will be the best bit. Yep. In the middle, there's a bit that's the best bit. And you're like, wow.
Do you go up with... Do you just sort? It sounds like you probably just kind of have a general idea of what you want to do, and then just kind of work it out on stage.
Yeah. I'm not a studious guy who writes it all down or anything like that.
But it sounds like you were during the FX show, which is, I think it must be kind of cool to have a show that's basically a theatrical expression of your stand-up.
Well, this is the thing is, for most people who like that, but some people have gotten angry. Like, I already know these jokes. And you're like, yeah, no, they work. They're good, right?
Yeah. But you haven't seen them like this. Now we're acting them out. What's the fucking problem?
Yeah, now we're acting them out. And there's different characters in them that you didn't see before. And, you know, and now we've changed them a little bit. And there is obviously some episodes that we wrote from scratch. And also the problem was the first episode was me taking a friend with muscular dystrophy to a brothel. And then FX were like, we really like DJ. You got to keep him in every episode. So now it's me and all my stand-up stories with a guy with muscular dystrophy.
Oh, right? Wow.
Which at first I was a little bit like, fuck, this might be difficult. But it's actually been a help because he's really easy to write stories for.
Yeah.
It's just, what happened to this guy? He's stuck on the toilet. Awesome.
And DJ's great, too. He's the best.
And the thing is, it doesn't take a lot of makeup to make him look disabled. He's a just add water type of actor. This is the thing about DJ is, and he doesn't complain about it. He's lost his virginity on screen 7 times.
He's the guy. He could be 50 and he might still be that
he's
guy.
He's the guy. Well, he's getting close to 40 and it's like they go, we need a guy who looks like a teenager who needs to lose his virginity. Like, he lost it on our show. Took it to say we got a brother, but 7 times he's lost his virginity. That's a look.
That's
You've
amazing.
Got the I haven't been fucked look.
But if as long as it keeps employing him.
Yeah. And you know, it's either that or he plays like someone who's like an alien, or he's in Supernatural as like an alien hunter or something. I haven't watched that show.
So I've been watching Supernatural. It's pretty cool. It's a, you know, Monster of the Week show. It's not as heavy-handed as X-Files. It's sort of playful, and it's fun.
Yeah.
X-Files wasn't heavy-handed. It was perfect.
No. I just mean the whole, like, the truth is out there.
Yeah, it is.
I haven't watched the X-Files for a long time.
I love the shit of the X-Files.
Does it still stand up?
I think it does.
Yeah, seasons 1 through 7 are great.
I watched the Twin Peaks episode once. It doesn't stand up.
Well, I haven't seen Twin Peaks in a while. I don't think I've seen Twin Peaks since the 90s.
I think it was on Netflix or something. I watched like 4 episodes in like a year ago.
And it feels like very kind of that time, right?
Yeah, but I remember us all being very excited.
Yeah.
Well, it was unlike anything else on television. Yeah, of course.
Laura Palmer, and they kept on saying this, and we were like, wow, what's that? She's found dead, wrapped in plastic. It was on the advert. Like, they kept on saying that. And then there was a dwarf speaking backwards. And what is this thing? And then it just... No, it's like Lost was the fucking... The first season was so good. And then by the end, it was like... I remember watching that guy who was the lead from Lost. And he was there going, you won't believe what happens at the end. And I was like, they're all dead? Are they all dead? No, you won't believe it. Are they all dead? Oh, they're all dead. But then it's like, and you haven't explained the polar bears still.
but with Twin Peaks, though,
can't have all the answers, Jim.
It was written by a fact. It was like kids writing a TV program and there's polar bears and the island moves, and they're all dead. You know what I mean? It was, they did not know how they were ending it. They were trying to piece it all together. They couldn't piece it all together. They thought there'd be an epiphany moment where they went, and that's where the bomb is there. But they never had that moment where they sort of worked everything back in, you know?
But then on Twin Peaks, they never really tried. It's just really not. And the show was so far out there.
Well, I think to write a TV show, you've got to have a series arc before you have the episodes, right?
Right.
Say, this is where I want to start and this is where I want to end. All right, now how do I get there? I don't know, but I don't think they did that. They were like, I think 24 didn't know that either towards the end.
I'm interested to see what Arrested Development does, because the last episode of Arrested Development really felt like, fuck it, we're never going to see these characters again. Okay, so Portia de Rossi's character is not really a Bluth. She's adopted. Now she wants to fuck Michael. And then so on. And it's like, what are they going to do now with these new episodes? That's, we'll see.
Yeah, but they might just...
Ignore that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they could do the Dallas...
Yeah.
Last 5 years of a dream.
Yeah. There was a show called Sledgehammer on in the 80s. And they thought they were getting canceled, and so the series finale was basically this atomic device goes off and just levels everything, and then they got picked up again after they had been canceled, and then so they basically in the beginning of the next season had to be like, all that happens someday. And then they just picked it up like in
what's
the middle.
That happen-
of-
in,
oh, right, right.
In Star Trek, The Next Generation, season 3 cliffhanger, The Best of Both Worlds, you know, where Picard's taken by the Borg. Michael Piller wrote
Why
that.
Why is this called The Nerdist?
On his way out. He wrote it on his way out. Right. And he's like, well, this happens. Good luck fixing that. I'm out. I'll see you later.
Oh, that sucks. Yeah. Fuck you guys. I just shit on your bed. Good luck.
So you own the comedy club at the back of the comic book store. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my comic book store.
Oh, you like Meltdown?
I'm a Meltdown all the time. It's I go down
awesome.
There to buy my comic books.
Are you perform? You should perform there.
I've never been asked.
You perform there whenever you want.
I got my name for ever so shortest time on the Transformers pinball machine.
Oh, yeah?
I have 3 pinball machines in my house, and I'm a pinball machine.
Which ones?
I have brand new AC/DC, which came out last year.
All right.
I have Spider-Man. They released after Spider-Man 3, the Tobey Maguire.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I have World Cup 94 from the World Cup 94.
Okay.
Soccer. And at the moment, there's a company called Jersey Jack that's bringing out, in 2014, they're bringing out a Hobbit machine, which is going to have an LCD screen as the back glass.
Oh, that's awesome.
So part of the thing. But the guys at Stern have always been good to me that I feel like I'd be cheating on them to buy it, because the Stern guys gave me my AC/DC for cost price because I talk about pinball all the time and always Twitter about pinball. So I'd feel like I was cheating on them because I know the next 3 machines they're bringing out, but I can't say.
Well, one of my... you know, sort of things I want to end up buying is a next generation pinball machine.
I liked the classic Star Trek pinball machine with
the TNG pinball machine is the best.
It's all right.
Well, it's the best.
It's
we all agree. It's the best.
No, it sounds like it just no one's agreeing.
There's a lot of things about pinball that no one agrees on. There's a few things that everyone agrees on. Medieval Madness is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The Addams Family is a great
pinball machine. Yep,
it's a great pinball machine. Biggest selling pinball machine of all time.
Is it really?
Yeah, biggest selling pinball machine of all time. And you're thinking like that movie wasn't one of the biggest hits of all fucking time, was it? And then you got the what other ones is like? Yeah, see,
you're a nerd. See?
Yeah, but then it gets a bit more muddy around like the next 10 favorites.
Yeah,
where everyone will sort of argue a bit more. I like Arabian Nights. I think it's an amazing machine. I like.
I like the Doctor Who pinball machine at Ground Control in Portland, but it has all the Doctors up to Sylvester McCoy.
So it's like 80s.
It's kind of an 80s.
The original Williams Indiana Jones is amazing. The last Stern Indiana Jones is not very good, although it has an 8 multi ball. And it is a weird. This is so. Here's a nerd story for you where I don't fit in. Right, I was the first bit doesn't sound very nerdy. I was banging a Playboy bunny in Vegas.
Let's trim that part of the story.
Right,
but, and she had been
a Playboy bunny in Vegas. Her name was Samantha Harris. If you want to Google redhead.
All right.
Anyway, so but as all Playboy bunnies, they don't live off that forever.
Right.
They all go to Vegas and work by the pool in bikinis and earn $600 a day in tips, right? That becomes their gig, right?
Sounds good.
And so I was seeing her, and she lived in a house with a whole lot of other girls who were ex-cyber girls or whatever. So there's a pretty girl house, right? She was a nice girl. I had another girl in Britain, and there was things that didn't work out for whatever reason. She's a nice girl. Anyway, but I...
Talk about multi-ball.
So I take the Playboy bunny down to the Pinball Hall of Fame. Because that's what I want to do with my time in Vegas.
The dude that runs it with the gray hair and
the
ponytail.
Yeah, the gray hair and the ponytail, right? And they just had the new Indiana Jones machine. This is like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was dipping my toe in the water of America. And so I was like, oh, these machines are so well maintained. And I'm like, oh, yeah. This one that they made in a prototype. Like, I was doing all that, right? Anyway.
Do you remember the classic Playboy pinball machine?
Yeah, well, they brought out there's been four or five Playboy pinball machines because Hugh Hefner's an enthusiast, and they're all in the Playboy mansion. They're all...
Yeah. It's the one where you start it up and it goes... like, it plays the Playboy theme.
Well, they just had a Playboy one that recently from Stern in, like, 2006, where you hit it and the centerfolds all folded out, and you had the option... of the nude pictures or bikini pictures.
Oh. How did she take this day trip?
She was into me, so she acted... You know when girls act overly enthusiastic about something and it's like they'll watch like a sporting event with you and go, that was a great hit!
He's going to know I don't give a shit about this. I have to...
Yeah, she was indulging me.
That's right? Nice.
So I got on that new Indiana Jones machine... And the Ark of the Covenant at the end is filled with eight balls. And it's very hard to get the eight-ball multi-ball, yeah. Right? But I got it. I got an eight-ball multi-ball. Now, the only other bigger multi-ball was that was Apollo 13, which had a 13-ball multi-ball. Terrible machine, but a big multi-ball, right? Anyway, so I had an eight-ball multi-ball. I was like a pig in shit. I was like, eight balls, right? So I come back to the hot girl house, and they said, how was your outing? And I, like a child who had just been playing pinball, went, I got an eight ball. Right? Right? And they were like, that's great. And then all these girls just sat around me and just hung on my every word for like the next 40 minutes.
Thinking he had coke.
And then I was like... And I was like, wow, these girls are actually really sweet and attentive.
Hey, we need to go to this club called the Ark of the Covenant. No. It's not.
And so one of the girls who was a bit more ballsy with, the rest of you aren't going to say something, I'm going to say, and she goes, you're staying in our house. You just don't walk in and tell us you've got an eight ball and not share it with anyone. And I'm like,
serious business.
And I know enough about, I've taken enough coke in my day, and I was like, oh, no, it was just playing pinball. It's good. It was in the Ark and everything. And the disappointment is these women just scattered away.
It's like turning a light on and cockroaches.
They're separate rooms.
Drugs, not pinball.
Oh, my God. Like, that's amazing.
That's a good nerd story.
Well, the pinball machine said winners don't use drugs. Where's everyone going?
So did I actually tell a successful nerd story that involves fucking a Playboy bunny?
Yeah, that is a successful nerd story that involves and scaring away a lot of the other ones. The way that you would actual rabbits if you started talking about pinball wildly.
Oh, my God.
They would scatter off into the bushes, never to be seen again.
The Terminator 3 machine has a huge multi-ball too, right?
Because
I played that a couple weeks ago in Santa Monica, and I felt like I was this is excessive.
I don't think it's that big. It was sort of the problem with the Terminator 3 machine. You know, Steve Ritchie made it. I like his machines, right? But it had ramps that were slightly too steep. But when the machine got old, it was very hard to hit up the ramp. And then that thing in the back glass that shot it up, that got tired quick, and it was hard to get parts for and stuff. Terminator 2 was a better machine.
Yeah, I like the T2 machine too. That's got the pistol,
It's got the pistol, but it's also got a cannon. And the AC/DC has the same cannon in it now, which comes out and you get to shoot the cannon into the thing.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I did like pinball. I mean, I was like Bally and Williams and the companies, because my dad had an arcade, and my dad had a bowling center, and so we had an arcade in
it. Cool.
And so we had every arcade in the 80s, when the video game revolution happened, it was like... I mean, I think of 70s as the era of just pinball. And then 80s, like, mostly video games and then, like, one pinball machine.
Well, pinball was huge. It was massive. Right through. There's a good documentary called Special When Lit, which is worth watching. I think it's on Netflix, which I if you want to know everything about pinball, Special When Lit is the documentary. And it talks about when pinball was banned because it was seen as a gaming machine, but they were all still made out of Chicago and they were being shipped around the world, but you couldn't play them in America. And then they had to fight to actually say it was a game of skill, not a game of luck.
Mm-hmm.
And it went through the roof. Video games came and killed it. And then it had a resurgence that was bigger than anything else, right? Which was around the 1993, around the era of the Twilight Zone machine, which is a great machine.
Oh, yeah.
And they started making the wide body slightly bigger.
Oh, I remember the Twilight Zone machine because when in an empty arcade, you can always hear it play the theme in the background somewhere.
And then the Addams Family came out and killed it, and they were giving all these guys, like, put as many toys in it as you want. And even the ones now, you can see they're cutting a few corners because they're like, we can't sell that many of them, and, you know. And they're only really bought for home use now because they just brought out an X-Men machine. They brought out an Avengers machine.
The Austin Powers one has, like, actual, like, McFarlane action figures of Austin Powers in it. Like, they didn't even bother doing their own mold. They just pulled the action figure off the shelf.
So it went through a peak. And then what killed pinball? Because Mars Attacks was a great machine.
Mm-hmm.
And then they brought out the Mars Attacks next machine that was... when they started integrating video games into pinball, where they had the glass with a video projected down into it, you could hit all the aliens and stuff like that. What killed it was what killed a lot of our childhoods, the Phantom Menace.
Yeah, the Phantom Menace game is just like,
it killed pinball.
I didn't know that.
Because it's a shit game. One of the major companies, I think it was Williams, it might have been Bally, they bought the rights up to episode one because this was going to be the biggest thing in history, right? So they spent exorbitant money to buy the rights to have the Star Wars pinball machine. The game sucked a little bit, but the machine came out 6 months after the movie once we all decided the movie sucked. And so the machine tanked and shut down that company, and they were the ones making the best pinball machines, and then everyone just sort of lost interest in pinball.
Oh, man, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Now are the Phantom Menace machines collectible? Because
it's not a good game.
Okay. No, that's a ground control, too, Phantom Menace.
Shooting out the middle the whole time. Shooting out the middle. And the animation's good, and the droids come down, and you shoot and kill. But technically, if you're a pinhead, it's not a great game to play. You know, there's not much of a challenge to it. It's just bang, bang.
If you could design a pinball machine, what elements would it have?
I like a lot of flippers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't want a lot of flippers. I don't want like six. I think four's a good amount. You know, I like a smaller upper playing field that has a tiny flipper, something that does a side shot. I think I haven't played it yet, but there was the people who are making this new Hobbit machine brought out a Wizard of Oz machine. I would have maybe bought it. I just don't want it in my house.
What was the premise?
The game's the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, just as a premise. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's got like... It's like playing on the fucking aristocrat.
You just heard a rainbow.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And it's like you go into different modes. And I like my pinballs to be like sex and rock and roll. I like it to have like some chick fucking with a monster over it.
Like the old
it.
Kiss machine.
Yeah, I like pinball to be like you want to smoke while you're playing it. You want to, you know what I mean? From all accounts, this Wizard of Oz machine's awesome. And I've looked at it online. I think it's a great machine. I couldn't.
Listen, you don't know how magical it could be.
But the Hobbit machine looks pretty.
Well, the Hobbit I haven't seen, but they're the same people are making it.
Okay.
But you know, I Stern made a great machine with the Simpsons. Was the last great machine that I thought was made. And it had a little thing where they kept on hitting it at the couch, and you had to bang it up and open the garage door and all that type of stuff. And I just like lots of toys. Four flippers, some complicated shots, two good ramps is all you need, and some multi-balls that aren't fucking, like Sega, as I would call it. Sega It used to be like you'd get a multi-ball and you'd be like, how the fuck did I get this? Like you were happy
right,
you had it.
Right.
But you were like,
How do I do this again?
They just gave it because you hit that three times or something. It was just too easy. Yeah. Multi-ball should be complicated to get. There should be a lock button, a place to lock your ball and a thing, you know, and then, you know, there should be a sense of achievement, just not a fucking moronic. So there's two things about pinball machines. You're trying to get it. And once you, no one can beat me on my home machines, not because I'm a better player than everybody else, but I just know I've cracked the code on this machine where to get all the points and how to do it and what's the fastest way to do it and the best order to do it and all that type of stuff. And that just takes repetition. I got a score on Spider-Man that I fucking, if someone's got a better score, they've cheated.
What's this?
It's 768 million. And a really good score is 100 million on that machine, right? And if someone's got a better score, they've cheated. And that's getting superhero mode. That's killing every single fucking thing on the board, getting into the special mode. That's like a game. And when it happened to me, I was by myself. And I was just, someone come home.
Somebody please get
this. Someone come home. Like I was holding the flipper, like just locking the ball for as long as I could.
Waiting for someone
to get home.
You gotta keep a piece of duct, like a roll of duct tape next to the machine so you can tape that down and then grab everybody and say, come look.
Yeah, I got to. But like, because there is the easiest way to cheat in the world. You can have false scores. All the scores on the internet of people getting over a billion on that. Is you just take the glass out and you can make a score quickly by going dunk, dunk, dunk with your hands. You can cheat a score very easily on a pinball machine.
Not on the internet, I know.
Oh, wait. Twin Galaxies would never allow that.
No, Walter would never let that fly.
The Twin Galaxies guy would. Well, there's a Special Win Lit documentary and there's a documentary on that fucking, on the Phantom Menace game.
There's a documentary on the Phantom Menace game?
Yeah, there's a documentary on when they invented the Mars Attacks and they thought this is going to save everything, this Mars Attacks game, and then they brought out the Phantom Menace and then the demise of pinball when all the companies shut down. And Stern just kept on going, and which thank God they did. Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing about technology and the way it's all come around is, you know, people got bored with pinball in the 80s because like, we have video games. But then now that everyone has video games everywhere, like on their phones and at home and everything, it's like, oh, now pinball is a thing that you can go do that's not, you can't get that experience anywhere else.
The problem is, there's certain things I can repair on myself, but getting someone out to repair other parts, without, I'm not good at fucking replacing a circuit board.
Enter John Ratzenberger.
You know who's good at it? The guy that runs the Pinball Hall of Fame.
I'm good at replacing light bulbs and rubber bands and cleaning the surface to make it all shiny. I've and some like my soccer one at the moment, the scoreboard is fucking dead. It's just, and I don't know if I have to get a replacement scoreboard or it's something to do with the circuit board being fried. Or I can't figure out where it's gone wrong. You can play it, but you don't know what your fucking score is.
Right.
So that's a pain in the ass. But I tell you what, you have a party, you come over to my house when there's a party, it's fucking, people queue up to play.
Of course they do. There's a pinball machine anywhere.
Yeah, but like you have put video games on during a party, people think you're antisocial.
Yeah. But everyone
right,
can.
But pinball, everyone can enjoy it.
You
can get around.
Even Guitar Hero and people playing at a party, you're like, what's this cunt doing?
Because pinball is sort of like, it's like three-dimensional. You can sort of get around it.
Yeah.
And just, you know.
Now I want to look up. I have a.
Jim, would you ever consider doing a pinball show for our YouTube channel?
Oh, that'd be so great.
Sure.
See? I just
sure,
did it.
Sure, I would.
That would be so amazing.
Let's talk, Jim.
There's a woman named Jerry Ellsworth who works at Valve.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a huge, big video game company, and one of her claims to fame is that she has this insane pinball collection, a lot of which she's just brought to Valve company up in Washington, and she mods games to do all these crazy things. She'll add like all sorts of cool stuff so that like she mods fucking pinball machines. She's someone that you should look into. Jerry Ellsworth, J-E-R-I Ellsworth.
Yeah, you can slut your machine up a little bit. People buy, like on Spider-Man, you can buy like city skyscrapes to go over the ramps.
Oh, really?
So yeah, people have made all that type of stuff. And you can put different legs on, and you can put the neon all through them as well, is a very popular type of thing to do it at home one.
We've been talking to Jim Jefferies, nerd comedian.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
This was really fun, man. I had no idea. I love hearing you talk about pinball. Like, I think it'd be fun to do a little like a pinball thing on the YouTube channel if you want. But people should definitely watch your show Legit, which is on FX.
Which has two pinball machines in the show at my request.
Which two?
It has the two that we could get the license for without paying very much. We have a Pinbot machine from back in the day.
Do you have the one that was in the...
And we have one called Airborne, which I've never seen before. It's an old one. But Airborne Fighter or something, which has like a sort of like a couple of like a Buck Rogers-y sort of guy looking at it. But Pinbot was quite a popular one. Then there was Bride of Pinbot was the second one.
What's the one in Happy Days?
I don't know. I did figure out the other day that on my TV show, I'm Fonzie. I have no reason to be there. It's me and a family.
Just... Yeah. Hey.
Like, the show's about me, but I'm the least important person in it.
You got to hit the pinball machine and get the high score.
Fonzie was the least coolest person in history.
I would
if
agree
you break
with you.
It down, a guy that hangs out at a milk bar with high school kids,
yeah. Yeah.
That's in his 30s, that lives in a studio apartment above someone's house in suburbia.
Above a garage.
Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a loser.
Yeah.
He's a fucking loser.
He conned everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
he was in it for the long con, Chris.
We're about to run out of disk space.
All right, well, fine. Let's
but
wrap
Jim
it up.
Jefferies, you're on Twitter, you're on everywhere.
Jim Jefferies, spelled J-E-F-F-E-R-I-S. There's another guy who has the other spelling who claims to be me.
But
he has 15,000 followers, and I don't really give a shit. As long as he'd stop telling other comics who he thinks are shit.
Oh, that sucks.
You know what I mean? Where I'm like, don't do that.
I have to hang out with those people. Thanks for being here, man. It was really good hanging out with you. We've never hung out before. This is really fun.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
We'll see you on the YouTube channel.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Pinball!
I'm going to end this with Pinball Wizard.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, see if we can clear that.
I'll
it's
just
not
say
a problem,
it.
Right?
Here's a pinball wizard.
The Elton John version or the
Who version? Well,
the Elton John version is the Who version.
I mean, it's I do kind of like the Elton John version because he's Captain Fantastic and he's got the cape and the fucking crazy.
It's the big stilt shoes.
Yeah, the crazy shoes that kind of warp your brain when you see it
because
it looks weird. Yeah, I think I might have to go Captain Fantastic on that one. But I could be swayed.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.